Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/Nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Tehillim Lamed Zayin, Psalm 37. Psalm 37 is an acrostic. The poetry follows the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and each letter is accounted for. Each letter is actually represented by a two-verse grouping, where the first letter of the first verse in the group contains the alphabetic, and the second verse usually continues the thought, usually either with a conjunctive vav, or the particle ki, usually because, or when, or indeed. The exceptions are the letters dalet, kaf, and kuf, which each have only one line, and ayin, the letter ayin, which starts in the middle of the previous verse. I should note, however, that both Dalet and Kuf are long lines, although not the only long lines, and either really could have been broken into two verses as well, had King David wished to have done so. In addition, two letters, Ayin and Taf, begin with a preposition, Le'olam, and a conjunction, U'tshuvat, respectively. The two exceptions, by the way, cause Bible scholars conniptions, and it is a great temptation for them to cut out the extra letter. This is especially true of the Le'olam, the Ayin verse, since it doesn't even start its own sentence, but is a continuation of the Samach grouping. So some scholars strip the Lamed preposition, leaving just Olam, start a new verse and add a subject so it becomes an independent group from Samach. However, once we start down the path of chopping off letters whenever we face a textual problem, there's no end to the mutilation that's possible. Ibn Ezra, in particular, was against going down the path of lower textual criticism. So let's just stick to our holy texts as they are. Let's trust in our Masoretes, our Anshei HaMasorah, who devoted their lives to an error-free transcriptions of our manuscripts throughout generations, and let's leave the text as it is and deal with it as it is. This psalm is an instructional, educational psalm, and not a prayer. Remember that in Psalm 34, another Lamed Daled, another acrostic, we had a short instruction which really showed up only in the letters Nun and Samech, although it was also introduced by the letters Lamed and Mem. All of that was wrapped inside a hymn to God, which constituted all the other letters of the alphabet. But here we have 100% instruction, which has some similarities, or quite a few similarities, not surprisingly, to the book of Proverbs, which is also a book of wisdom and instruction, including, by the way, occasionally a first-person speaker, presumably the teacher or the instructor, such as in the super famous Nun verse, Nar Hayiti Gam Zakanti, which we'll get to in a little bit. The question that the teacher is dealing with is, throughout this psalm, is why shouldn't I behave badly? Because it seems that bad people, because of their badness, profit from this life. And to be perfectly honest, there doesn't seem to be much profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, in the honesty business. So pretty much every letter deals with this issue, and in some way the psalm is repetitive, even though each letter or letter grouping offers a slightly different perspective and is presented in a slightly different poetic style. Sometime a group is all about the value, a letter group is all about the value of being good. Sometimes the group is all about the downside of being bad. Sometimes the first line is about good and the second line of a group is bad, and sometimes it switches. Sometimes there's a chiastic structure, meaning first good, then bad in the first verse, and then bad, and then good in the second verse. So you have a good, bad, bad, good form. And sometimes it's the opposite. You have a bad, good, good, bad form. All different ways of catching one's interest by expressing things in a different poetic style. Because the psalm is large and complex, I've asked the OU to put an Adobe file, that is a Adobe Acrobat file, on their website next to this link, which contains the psalm nicely laid out in alphabetic groupings and color-coded, red for focus on bad and green for focus on good. So if you're able to view it while I'm explaining this rather long, large, complex psalm, it will probably make the learning of it much, much easier. And with that, as a very long introduction, let's go on to the psalm itself. Lid David, by David. Aleph. Al titchar bamireim, al tikanei ve'osei avla. Do not become agitated. Titchar is the hitpael, the reflexive form of charad, to become angry or heated. So I'll go with agitated, but you can use your own adjective, if you think that agitated is a little too wishy-washy. Ibn Ezra goes with mixed up. But in this long and difficult psalm, that is, don't become mixed up or involved with the evildoers. But the problem is, in this long and difficult psalm, is that there are really many variable translations and variant translations, and it's really impossible to cover them all in one shear. So I here merely and humbly give you one possible understanding of this psalm, and give you one offer of translations for some of the many complex and multifaceted words, and I welcome you to challenge my readings with variants as you wish. The sense here, getting back to the psalm, I think, is don't be agitated with those who cause evil, i.e. with all the benefits they seem to reap. Do not be jealous of those who do wrong. The jealousy and the agitation that one is potentially can feel comes from the fact that things go so exceptionally well for them, for the wicked. Perhaps even because of their evil doings, things go very well for them. Therefore, one is tempted to become aggravated, upset, agitated. Ki chachatzir meira yimalu uchyerek desha yibolon. Why should you not become agitated? Because like the plants, they quickly wither, like green grass, they dry out. The wisdom here is that the short-term market always goes pop. So don't worry about their short-term and ill-gotten gains. If you're looking, you need to focus on the fact that that these gains are quickly lost. If you're looking at my Adobe file, you will notice that the two olive lines are in red, which means that they are directed towards the problems of wrongdoers. The next two lines, however, are in green because they are a positive instruction on how to do good, on how to be good. Letter bet. B'tach ba'Adonai va'asei tov, shechon eretz, u'rei emunah. Have faith in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land, and shepherd, or in our modern terminology, cultivate your belief. Ibn Ezra sees this as a continuation of the Aleph group, that because the evildoers trust only in themselves, they have only short-term gains. But if you trust in God and do well, then you will dwell in the land and see long-term gains. V'hitanag al Adonai v'yitein lecha mish'alot libecha. And if you take joy in God, he will give you your heart's desire. Gimel. Gol al Adonai darkecha uvtach alav v'hu ya'aseh. Literally, roll your way in, or perhaps reveal your way in, or towards the Lord. Perhaps the sense can be determined from the next two words, uvtach alav, and trust in him. It means, leave it to God to take care of all of your issues. Vehu yaaseh, he will take care of all of these things. Vahotzecha or tzidkecha, umishpat katzahorayim. And he will bring out your righteousness like a light and your justice like the afternoon, i.e. like the afternoon's brightness, or perhaps better, its clarity. I think that the second verse makes it clear that in the first verse, the instructor is not saying, sit around and do nothing and don't work and God will take care of everything, all your business and all of the things that you do. Rather, you go about your business, literally your way, darkecha, but you trust in God that he will make sure that what you do is recognized by all as righteous and just. You don't have to spend all your time trying to justify your actions and convince people that what you're doing is good. The next line, Dalit, is half green, speaking positively on how to behave, and then half red, since it warns us to avoid a negative response to the wicked. Dom la donai v'hit cholel lo al titchar b'matzliach darko, Be'ish oseh mizimot. Be still for the Lord and wait for him. Don't get agitated by one who is successful in his business. Don't get agitated by a scheming man or by scheming man. Again, the sense is here, wait for God, since in the end, he will set things straight and make things clear. Letter Hey. Heref me'af v'azov chema, more instruction, al titchar ach le Hareya. Again, we have the word titchar again and again. Avoid anger, abandon fury. Don't become agitated. All it does is harm. Radak quotes Ibn Gviril, who sees this as a general advice or instruction to avoid becoming heated, especially after you see how well things are going for the wicked. Ibn Ezra actually has a nice twist on this, which is don't get angry or get involved in his sense in the wicked, unless it is to cause. Ach is except lahareya, except to cause the wicked harm. And why shouldn't you be angry at what you see? Kimureim yikare tun v'kovei adunai hema yirishu aretz, because the wicked will be cut off, while those who put their hope or trust in the Lord, they will inherit the land. So, leaving aside Ibn Ezra's interpretation, sticking closer to Ibn Gviril's interpretation, the sense may be that if you let anger get the upper hand, you will become the evildoer, and you will become cut off. But if you stay silent and wait for God, as instructed in the Dalet grouping, you will come out on top. But the sense may also be, again, don't get angry at the short-term gains, because in the end it all works out, which fits nicely and actually with the next section. Vav. Ve'od me'at ve'ein rasha v'hit bonanta al mekomo ve'einenu. And in just a little while there will be no wicked man. You will consider where he was, and he won't be there. And now for one of the famous lines, somewhat mistranslated in the Bible, Va'anavim yirishu aretz vihit anagu al rov shalom. And the lowly, but it doesn't say the meek, will inherit the land, and it doesn't say the earth. Why? Because no bad people will remain. Therefore, getting back to the pasuk, they, the lowly, will, the downtrodden, will rejoice, v'hit angu al rov shalom, they will rejoice in all the abundant peace. This is clearly pointing at a messianic times, I think, and I think it also supports the Rambam's view of messianic days, i.e. that people may still commit sins. That is, it's not that people are, will become robots and they won't be able to commit sins, but there will be so few of them, and there will be such overwhelming majority when it comes to doing the right thing, rov shalom, not kol shalom, but rov shalom, then things just smooth, they just kind of flow smoothly because of the overwhelming influence of good. And therefore, these just people can take pleasure in their world. And now in the group Zion, we go to the description of how the wicked will get their just deserts. Just deserts, or just rewards. Well, no, just deserts, just punishments. Zomem rasha l'tzadik v'chorek alav shinav. The wicked plot against the righteous, gnashing their teeth in him, or gnashing his teeth at him. Adonai yischak lo ki ra'a ki avo yamo. But the Lord laughs at him, i.e. at the wicked, because he, God, has seen that his day, i.e. the wicked's judgment day, is coming. Note that here the interesting variant misspelling of yischak, to laugh at, with a sin rather than a tzadi. Chet continues the idea of the traps laid by the wicked against the poor and the righteous. And it is perhaps this very quality that they're constantly plotting, and that the goodness, you know, why just not let the good be? The evil seem, the evildoers, the wicked seem preoccupied with putting down the good. And that very characteristic of them may be the defining characteristic of their wickedness. Cherev patchu rishaim v'darchu kashdam lehapil ani v'evyon litvoach yishrei darech. The wicked unsheathed the sword, swords in the singular, but it may have a plural context. They have drawn their bows in order to bring down the poor, to slaughter those whose way, or whose doings, or whose dealings is right. Yishrei darech. Charbam tavo b'libam mikashtotam tishavarna. Their swords will enter their own hearts, i.e. the hearts of the wicked, and their bows will be broken. So God takes their very plot, their very evil, and will wind up destroying it, or in fact causing their plotting to cause them, the evil people, to self-destruct. In Tet, we return to the issue of the wicked, who often seem to profit from their deeds. In Tet, we return to the idea of the wicked, the issue of the wicked, who often seem to profit from their deeds, and the instructor offers a counter-approach. Tov ma'at la tzadik me'hamon rishaim rabim. The righteous is better off, the righteous person is better off with a little than the wicked is with his great plenty. Kiz ra'ot rishaim tishavarna v'somech tzadikim Adonai, because the might, literally the limbs of the wicked, will be broken, while the Lord is the support of the righteous. This metaphor, drawn by the participle supports, somech, compares God's supporting arms versus, or contrasts God's supporting arms against the frail arms of the wicked, which will be broken. And there's also a sense that the good person appreciates the little that he has, whereas the Rasha really is never satisfied with all of the things that he has. Yod, Yodei Adonai Yimei Tmimim V'Nachalatam La'olam Tihyeh. The Lord sustains, Yodea sustains the lives, or literally the days of the faultless, and their portion will exist forever. Now, I'm translating Yodea not as to know, that God knows, but in a more biblical sense, that by knowing something, you sustain or extend life or breathe life into it. This is why the term also, Yodea, also means to have sexual relations, especially when followed by conception and birth. The use here is identical to the use of the word Yodea in the final verse of Psalm 1. Ki Yodea Adonai Derech Tzadikim V'Derech Rishaim Toved, because God sustains the way of the righteous, but he destroys the way of the wicked, of the evildoers. Where there, Yodea is the opposite, clearly, of Toved, which means to destroy, and therefore Yodea must mean to sustain, maintain. And the reference is extra fitting, since the next line raises an idea that is also dealt with in Psalm 1. Lo yevoshu be'et ra'ah uvimei ra'avon yisba'u. They, the faultless, will not be embarrassed in bad times, will not be shamed in bad times. In days of hunger, they will be satisfied. That is, when the going gets tough, it's the good that will wind up making out good. Kaf, which is a single verse, continues this thought and continues the reference to Psalm 1. Ki rishaim yovedu voivei Adonai kikar karim kalu ve'ashan kalu. Indeed, the wicked will be destroyed. Note the word avad, verb avad from Psalm 1. And the enemies of the Lord, like the priciest, fattest sheep, will be polished off wholly in smoke. And I think the sense is that they will be like lambs of the slaughter, so to speak. And now, a contrast between the wicked and the righteous in verse Lamed. Lo verishat rasha velo yishalem vitzadik chonein v'notein. The wicked borrows but never pays back. But in contrast, the righteous is merciful or generous and keeps giving and giving and giving. Chonein v'notein. Now, we expected, what we would have expected as readers of this poem, is to a direct comparison between the two. That is to say that the righteous borrow and pay back always, as opposed to the wicked who never pay back. But instead, the righteous is not like the evildoer who borrows and borrows, but he is like a lender, a person who gives and gives, always willing to part with his cash, perhaps even loaning it to those who are at risk of default. So this key can't mean because we already know what the righteous person does. He gives and gives and gives. So it's an affirmation. Indeed, those who are blessed by him will inherit the land, and those who are cursed by him in this case meaning God, will be cut off. And based on the context, it seems that the one who is blessed by God, that one is blessed when one gives generously, and one is cursed when one consumes and consumes irresponsibly without forethought of default. Of course, as with all of this psalm and with life in general, it's not clear what is the cause and what is the effect. So perhaps generous lending causes one to be blessed and inherit the earth, or perhaps because a good person is blessed with inheriting the earth, he can therefore lend generously. I must admit that I prefer the former approach, both philosophically as well as because it's I think a better read of our text here. And note also that we keep returning over and over again to the idea of inheriting the land, Yirshu Aretz, which is obviously a theme that weaves itself through the different letters of Psalm 37, and of which we'll talk about a little more in a bit. Mem. Me Adonai mitz adegaver konanu vidarko yechbatz. Now we reaffirm that God is the one who enables success. The steps of man are from God, i.e. his ability to maintain a firm gait in life. He, i.e. God, gives him, i.e. the a person, a solid foundation and desires his ways. That is to say, because God desires them, they are realized, they are solid, they are maintainable and sustainable. Ki pol lo yitol, ki Adonai sameach yado. When he falls, he does and does not sprawl, it is because God has supported his hand. Again, cause and effect. Now we get to the famous Nun verse, with the instructor telling us, his audience, in first person, Na'ar hayiti gam zakanti velo ra'iti tzadik ne'ezav v'zaro mevakesh lachem. From the time I was a youth until I became old, I neither saw a righteous person abandoned and, or perhaps, or, his children begging for bread. Now, this is a difficult thing to say. So I doubt David here is claiming that the righteous never suffer. If that was true, he wouldn't have to write this psalm in the first place, and many other psalms he wouldn't have to write about. So based on the next verse, Kol Hayom Chonein, it's always best to look at things in context, so let's read the follow-up verse. Kol Hayom Chonein Umalve V'Zaro Livracha. Every day he is generous, he is merciful, he loans, and blessings are for his children. Now it becomes clear that we are referring to a specific righteousness, the righteousness of generousness and mercy, which caused the person to lend out his assets even though there were hard times. And even though, so therefore, even if he becomes down, and God, and in fact even other people, will make sure that justice is done for him, or at least for his family who fell on hard times. It's like what the Beatles said, the love we take is equal to the love we make. Now, in Samach, we return to the general instruction, one that was the central message of Psalm 34. Sur meirav aseh tov, avoid evil, i.e. the negative commandments, and do good, i.e. the positive commandments, ushchon le'olam, and dwell forever. Again, we have the theme that limiting inheriting the land is the just reward for doing the right thing and avoiding the wrong thing, and it will last forever. But the word shchon also hints at the idea of shechinah, or God's presence, in the sense that not we won't leave the land and will inherit the land forever, because his presence will remain in the land forever. Ki Adonai ohev mishpat velo ya'azov et chasida, because God loves justice, or perhaps from the word mishpatim, he loves those who follow his laws, and he will not abandon his chasidim. That is, we won't get abandoned by the land because God doesn't abandon us. That idea of shchon and shchinah. Now this idea continues, as does the verse. But even though we're in mid-verse, we start with the next letter, ayin. Le'olam, olam, le'olam nishmaro, v'zera rishayim nichrat. For they, his chasidim of the previous sentence, will be protected, but the children of the wicked will be cut off. So upping the ante, not only will the wicked be cut off, but their offspring will be as well. And this is in contrast with the offspring of the righteous who will never want for bread, v'zaro mevakesh lachem, or lo ra'iti zaro mevakesh lachem, because of the mercy and the generousness of the parent, the children get what's coming to them, good. And because of the wickedness of the parent, the offspring get what's coming to them, which is bad. The letter pei is very descriptive, or possibly even instructive of how a righteous person should really behave. Pi tzadik yehge chokma ulshonot tetaber mishpat. The mouth of a righteous person voices wisdom, and his tongue speaks justice, or perhaps he speaks the laws, again from the word mishpat. And notice that chokma is also a synonym for the Torah, and is often used that way in wisdom literature, like the book of Proverbs, so therefore we shouldn't be surprised to see it used here in a wisdom tehillim, in a wisdom or instructional psalm. Torat Elohav b'libo, the instruction, or perhaps simply the Torah of God, is in his heart, or perhaps in his mind, or on his mind, and therefore lo timad ashurav, his steps, i.e. his direction, and his success will not slip because due to the direction that he chooses. So in the previous section we had sur meirav aseh tov, that's the doing of mitzvot, and in this section pei, we have the sense of learning Torah and living Torah and following the laws, like God said to Yoshua when he went into Eretz Yisrael, V'hagita bo yomam v'alayla. Now, the evildoer's response to the success of the righteous is described in the next letter, in Sadi. Sofer rashala tzadik umevakesh lahamito. The evildoer keeps a lookout for the righteous person. That is, he has him in his targets at all times. And he umevakesh lahamito, he seeks to kill him. As we will see in the next verse, it is through the kangaroo courts and bogus justice that the evildoer tries to get rid of the righteous. Adonai, but Adonai lo ya'azvenu biado velo yarshienu vehi shafito. But the Lord does not abandon him, i.e. the righteous, in his, the evildoer's hand, and he, i.e. God, does not allow him to be vilified when he, i.e. the righteous one, is up for judgment. Kuf. Kaveil Adonai ushmor darko virom mimcha lareshet aretz behikaret rishaim tireh. Put your hope, or perhaps your trust, in the Lord and guard his path, i.e. follow his instructions, and he will raise you up to inherit the land. You notice again we have the inheriting the land, but now it's a step higher. He will raise you up to inherit the land. You will see the cutting off of the wicked. Bikaret, Rishayin, Tir'et. Note also the repeated use of the word karet along with Yeshu Aret. So our rabbis understood that cutting off is in the world to come. That is, one's soul, so to speak, is cut off from God. And inheriting the land is also understood by the rabbis as an eternal, when is that inheritance of the land? That land is not this world, but the world to come. This then places the future, the acharit, that we are about to discuss, in messianic times or in heaven. It also then might argue that the success of the wicked and the suffering of the righteous is only in the here and now and not in the final chapter of the play in messianic times of the world to come. And therefore, it's not always that, you know, in the last 20 years of the life, the righteous will get what they deserve. It could be in the world to come, but that, since we firmly believe in it, is never too late either. But bringing it back to this word, in Resh, the word bringing it back to this world, let's get our feet back in this world rather than focus on the times of Mashiach. In Resh, the instructor offers up a personal experience that he saw in this world as proof that everything balances out in the end. Ra'iti rasha aritz umitarek ke'ezrach ra'anam ve'avor v'hine enenu va'avak sheyu ve'lo nimtza. I have seen an evil person grow strong or aggressive or repressive, well-rooted, like a leafy, multi-branched tree. That's from the word ezrach, like a civilization, a citizen, which has its branches in every little, everybody's business. And he passes, va'ya'avor, and behold, he's gone, v'hineh'ineno, and I look for him, va'avakshe'yu, and he was nowhere to be found, v'lo nimtza. Again, don't be fooled by the power, the seeming permanence, the success, because it's easy come, and then easy go. Shin, the next letter, does a direct comparison of what will come in the end. We get to that idea of the acharit, the end, the future, of the good person against the wicked person. Shmor tam, ure yashar ki acharit li'ish shalom, ufo she'im nishmedu yachdav, acharit rishaim nichrata. Mind the pure and watch the upright, because there is a future for a man of peace. But the rebellious will be altogether destroyed. The future of the wicked is canceled. And whether that's referring to the future in this world or the future in the world to come or both, is up to you to interpret. Finally, the letter Tuf ends with a recognition that God is at the root of the future success of the righteous. Utshuat tzadikim me Adonai ma'uzam be'et tzara. And the salvation of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in troubled times. Vaya azreim Adonai vayifalateim yifalateim mirishayim viyoshiim ki chasuvo. Once again, as in we've seen in many psalms, we have both past and future verbs, very often the same root verb, to indicate the timelessness of God's salvation. And he had aided them, and he has rescued them. He will rescue them from the wicked, and he will save them, because they take shelter in him.